Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
This is Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, featuring the best of the best from today's conversations, observations, and ruminations, because great radio is still fresh the second time around. Show.
Let's talk about it now. The college football playoff format is official, but it's only a two-year deal. So there's a lot of ways to kind of discuss this, and I know y'all love college football, so I would love for you to fire in on the text line your opinions on the format. Is there something you would rather have different when the playoff's up in 2 years, the current deal? Do you want something changed? 704-570-9610 to text in. It's five auto bids. The five highest ranked conference champs will get in. Most years you would expect it to be, you know, the quote unquote power four right now, and then one group of five. Doesn't have to be that way. You know, if somehow two group of fives are higher than like the ACC or something like that, probably or the Big 12 champ.
Why did it have to be the ACC?
I threw Big 12 into it.
Recently, the American would probably be the fifth one, right? Tulane's had some.
Typically, Sunbelt. Yeah, Sunbelt's come
but
close.
But then we had a chance to get in there. Unless Boise State has a type run. They have, you know, one of those teams out west,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, but at least one of them's guaranteed in. I love that. But then the other seven of the 12 are just the highest ranked at largest. Now, the way things will work out, the top four seeds are just conference champs. So if, you know, it doesn't matter what the rankings are, it's the four high, well, it does. It's four highest ranked conference champs, which gives the ACC a great chance to have, if not every year, many years, to have your conference champ get a bye. So the first four seeds get a bye. Then five through eight seeds play at home. So the five seed would be the, you know, next ranked conference champ, and then you would go from there. And they would get home games against, the way you described it was the best way. It's kind of like the NCAA tournament matches.
Yeah, like 5-12, 6-11, 7-10, there,
and 8-9. So yeah. Yeah, those would be the games. Bone, I love this. I think this is great. I know some people are going to probably text in and say, here's what I already want to tweak in 2 years, or whatever, and that's fine. I'm not saying it's perfect, but I really don't have many problems at all with this. I like the representation. I like the conference champs being rewarded. I do think going to 12 is a good number. Some people are already bringing up 16. Can we play 12? We've tripled our playoff teams. Can we play 12 first before you try to go to 16?
See how this goes.
What do you think? I really like this a lot, man. I do.
Here's what's scary to me about it is I also like it. That's it. That's my only concern. You and I like it. So when we like something in college sports, though, somewhere along the way, something will go awry where we go, okay, this may have to be adjusted. I can see Mac fans not liking it. I know the setup is nice here. There's no cap on how many teams of that seven at-larges. There's no cap on how many can come from one conference. So I could see backlash if we have a situation where, you know, we go four Big Ten, and there's so many options now from the Big Ten and the SEC. They have so many teams. If we go like four SEC, three Big Ten, and one additional team, where fans say, why are they getting four? That could be what makes fans angry. But to me, this is, and there may be debates that we like with that. I don't know, but this seems like we're headed in the right direction here for the postseason.
Yeah, I don't think you can avoid that. I don't think you can expand a playoff without having to deal with a ton of SEC and Big 12.
Not at this point. There's too many. They have like 40 teams combined here.
And I don't think the growing is done, right? I'm so worried of them pillaging the ACC too while they're at it. But I just don't think there's any way to avoid that.
Somebody this has a March Madness type feel to it. We've always wanted that. It's kind of not quite that, but it feels like that's what we're going to get here.
I love the games at home sites. I like the fact that I like one through four getting byes, and I like the fact that conference champs get byes. If you're an SEC or a Big Ten fan, maybe you don't like maybe you just want the top four ranked teams to get byes. But as someone that would like to see the ACC get a chance at byes, to see the love spread around a little bit, I like that format. The home playoff games for 5 through 8, I think, is really cool, too. That's one element the playoff has been lacking is the conference or the home atmosphere is the hell I'm trying to spit out. So I think you introduce that as well. I love that aspect of it. I think that's freaking cool. I really do.
And here's how it's going to work, right? So the first round is going to be played on December 20th and 21st. They'll move on to the quarters on December 31st, New Year's Eve, which will be the Fiesta Bowl. So they're going to have one Fiesta Bowl quarter on that night. And then the next day, January 1st, it's going to be the Peach, the Rose, and the Sugar, the other three quarterfinals. Then the Orange Bowl will be the semis, and that's going to be January 9th. So you're still going to have the bowl tie-ins there, but it's going to be in the playoff format.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a time, isn't it? Right now, all these important games.
This texter says this will not produce a different champion. The champion still comes from the same group. Well, I got to be honest. I've thought the last couple of years things have. I thought we got some new blood in there.
Michigan just
Washington,
won it all.
Texas, Michigan won it all for the first time here in the playoff era. So I get it. There was an era where it was what? Bama, Clemson. And then you'd have like Ohio State and Oklahoma, then Georgia started to get in there. But I feel like it's been opened up a little more here the last couple of years. But the whole point, and I don't know what you think about this argument, Flound, is same teams are still going to win. I don't think they're necessarily doing this to get a different champion. I think they're doing this to get maybe some actual close, playoff games.
Right.
Because there for a while, it didn't seem like we had any. And also just to include more teams, right? To give more teams a feeling of you're in the postseason, you're included in this, rather than just like for someone that's complaining about the same teams. Well, aren't you tired of, now this year was different, but a lot of years the same teams being in the playoffs. Like, I think they're trying to change that, right?
Well, yes, they are. And they're trying to have more teams value the regular season because apparently we've heard bowl season doesn't matter anymore, right? Like, these are the same people that complain that bowl season doesn't matter. Well, this makes
more games matter.
Yes, more games matter down the stretch of the season.
Yep.
The other thing that I don't really understand is if the argument is that it's not going to change who the champion is, then why don't we just go back to the BCS way? Why don't we just pit the top two teams against each other and play it?
Yeah, or stay with the top four.
Like, this is an opportunity for it to happen, and you're going to look pretty damn stupid when the number six overall team one of these years wins the title. What are you going to say then? So well, they would have won it anyways? Come on. Get the hell out of here.
What do you think, Bone? Do you think a team outside the top four will win the title in like the first 5 years, like if they use this format for five straight years?
Certainly possible. At least it gives it a little more of a question.
I mean, second best team, the way it's going to be seeded,
no matter what the format is, we're probably going to get to similar teams along the way. But at least what this does along the way is this. Think about local schools here. Charlotte in the American, App in the Sun Belt, ECU in the American. They ever get back to a level they were once at. Think about what that does for those teams if they win their conferences, Mac. If they win the American, if they win the Sun Belt, and they're ranked high enough. App State's had some runs before where they're in the mix for that group of five games. Charlotte's going to try to get there. At least if they go win their conference and they're ranked high, they have a shot to be a part of this thing. So there's more inclusion at the back end of this thing. It may lead at the front end to similar teams, but we're also going to get more games. We're going to get more teams included at the back end. And someone says he doesn't want to see blowouts. Well, that could be said.
You were seeing blowouts in the semis, and that could be said
for March Madness, too, with some of these matchups.
And you're seeing blowouts in these bowl games. Like, are you dying to see that?
Yeah.
Like, that's the alternative, is that these teams just go to bowl games. So you'd rather see teams not fully, like, you want teams fully stocked in the postseason. You're going to have more teams that have their
meaningful games. More teams play meaningful games in the month of November, too, because more teams have a chance of squeezing in rather than just the top maybe like nine schools are playing meaningful games.
I just read you the schedule from December 20th to the semifinals on January 9th. That's meaningful football all the way through.
Yeah.
There's games all the time. Right now, we watch our teams that we like and play in games that don't matter, and there's still some of those that are going to happen. But think about how many of the New Year's Six bowl games, Mac, we watch that don't matter. Now think about how many big games for about 3 weeks or more, 4 weeks, we're going to get now.
Yeah.
Every conference title game is incredibly important.
Because you're getting a top four seed and a bye if you win conference title. Now, I still do think, going back to Flounder's point about like number six could win it or whatever, like think about teams that don't win the Big Ten or the SEC, the second best team. like, say Michigan wins the Big Ten, Ohio State could be like, you know, one of those teams playing a home game, right? Not getting a bye. I could easily see the second best SEC or Big Ten team go from like a sixth seed to winning it.
Georgia could have won the title this year.
Yeah. Georgia was a sixth seed.
They were
right?
a sixth seed technically last
so
year.
I do think that's definitely possible. This texter says, I like it as a fan of North Carolina State. Maybe we get in this year by winning the ACC and get a top four seed, which would be awesome. Or maybe the second best team in the ACC gets in.
Okay, slow your roll.
The ACC is going to have to be better, though, than it was last year. They couldn't even get the one team in unbeaten.
Like, we have a WFNZ FanDuel text from Florida State Phil. He says, so are we invited or not to this whole thing?
Oh,
Top 12, you would have got in there, Philly. Mm. You would have got yourself in, and you would have got a home game, baby. You would have been rocking and rolling.
Flounder, I'm going to give you the honor here. You can make this your feed or whatever. I don't care what you do with it. Will you explain the Notre Dame angle here? Because I tried to bring it up in hour number one, and I just got completely blasted by Max's anger towards Notre Dame. But all I wanted to mention was how Notre Dame plays into the seedings here.
Yeah, so they can, since they are not in a conference, they cannot be a top four seed. Now, this shouldn't shock anybody because this was the way that it was supposed to be with the 6+6 format well. But apparently there are people that are complaining about this, and Mac seems to take issue with this. One, because he hates Notre Dame, and two, because he thinks that Notre Dame will not be faced with this scenario all that much where they will need to complain.
And another thing, first of all, Notre Dame approved it, right? Their AD is part of, he's there with the conference commissioners when they approve this. He has a say because they're almighty and they're all powerful.
There you go.
Because they're Notre Dame and we're better than you. But anyway,
there it is.
The other thing, too, is if they win 10 games, they don't have to play a conference championship game, so they don't have to risk a loss. Right, to a high caliber opponent like all the other teams do. That's another thing in their favor. If they get to 10 wins, who's keeping them out of a 12 team playoff? I would think just about every year they'd be in. And here's the other thing too, I would say, because the only reason I got mad, I didn't mean to get mad at you, Bone, although I did yell at you.
You called me Notre Dame Bone for no. All I did was mention how they factor in here.
What did I say?
Called me Golden Bone or
Golden
something.
Golden Bone enables them, is what I screamed also, out by the way, at the top of my lungs.
The name Golden Bone, let's not Google that on your work computers.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's clean on the internet. But here's another thing, too. And here's the bottom line. As I go Stone Cold here. Stone Cold do bottom line or is that The Rock? Who does bottom line?
That's the bottom line.
Oh, Stone Cold. Okay, I got that right, actually. But here's the bottom line. If you choose to not go in a conference for financial reasons, and that's what's important to you, sorry, you ain't getting a top four seed. It's that simple. You choose to be the one holdout that's too good for a conference because of the financial ramifications. And I'm sorry, let's not cry for your asses when you can't get a top four seed.
We have an NC State fan, Mac, worried about the playoffs. That they won't be treated right by the referees in a 12-team playoff.
Is that a serious text?
Yeah.
Oh, or is that like a spoof because of the topic today?
Well, Jonathan says State won't get enough calls if they get into the playoffs.
Oh, this State team's going to be so good this year, Wolfpack fans. They are a legit threat to win the ACC and to get a top four national seed and a bye. Like, it's legit possibility, man.
I can't wait till they win 9 games.
Saul Witt is from 24/7 on the top 10 returning wideouts to college football next year, Mac. They left your guy Concepcion off the list.
Really?
Yeah, he was the first
one. That dude's electric, man.
He was the first one that said that he almost got in but did not. But that little bulletin board material there for your guy.
Put it on there. Put it on there, Coach Dorn. Put it on the board.
Listen to Mac and Bone every weekday morning from 6 to 10. Instant replay continues with more in a moment. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. This afternoon on the Wes and Walker Show.
Wes and Walker Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ. Let's get to some text messages on the FanDuel text line, shall we? 704-570-9610. Lots of people writing in about our college basketball conversation in the opening segment. Myron Goodman said, Fitty, that is possibly the worst college hoops take ever.
Memphis, yeah, he would know.
Memphis being a top 30 job, sure, but not top 20. Stop that. Then Myron Goodman, thank you, Myron. He says, go Niners. And then Brian said, damn, Fitty, JD would never do his bro Walker like that. That's right. I feel like I do want JD here instead of Fitty, because Fitty's just trying to get on my nerves. I don't feel like JD would care enough to do that.
I don't feel like Walker has appreciated or embraced JD the way that JD wanted to be appreciated and embraced. And it's nothing against Charlotte. I want them to make the tournament, but I realize that their path to get there is winning their conference tournament, which I do not think is going to happen. I want Memphis in the tournament because they were a fun team the first half of the year. And I don't want to see a good man like Penny Hardaway get fired.
Okay.
That's all it is. It's no hard feelings.
Did not realize that you cared as much about Penny as you do. But here we are. Yeah, I wouldn't want to see him get fired either. We had one text write in. Please talk about Creighton. We can talk about them a little bit. The 15th team in the country beating UConn. UConn on the road. Not unranked, but... UConn, at least Crane's not unranked is what I mean, but UConn going on the road and they lose by 20. Didn't see that coming. Crane just couldn't miss last night, but we all had the take watching, you know, as we were ending the show yesterday, hey, are the Huskies just going to roll through everybody with ease and then find themselves winning back-to-back titles? Creighton at least put a stop to that for a little while. It doesn't mean that we have to shift and say UConn isn't a good basketball team anymore. We don't have to get too crazy with it. But I didn't see a Blue Jays 20-point win last night against the number one team in the country.
No, I didn't see that coming at all. I put that on as well. I had that going while the weight gain was going as well. Expecting a good game, but for UConn to dominate, pull away like they do against a lot of teams. But that just wasn't the case last night, man. And Creighton came out. They were up for them. They were ready. And that's the life you live as the number one team. You're going to come into every team's gym as the target. And so that's what happened last night. And I think UConn had a little bit of an off night and playing against a very good Creighton team. And they couldn't get the job done.
The thing I love about college basketball is I think you forget how long of a season it is. Like, Creighton's a legitimate team that can make the Final Four.
Yeah.
They can win a national championship. But, you know, you have a bad week and all of a sudden everyone thinks you're not good and you're not going to do anything special. Short story short, the Big East tournament come March is must-watch television. Like, I'll watch the ACC because I love it, but the Big East tournament is going to be the place to be.
It's going to be a lot of fun to see what those two schools can do. Somebody also said, where is Belmont Abbey? I'm guessing they're talking about the net rankings.
Up 85.
They're in Belmont. Just so you know, where is Belmont Abbey? They're in Belmont. No disrespect, but I can't find them on the net rankings. I can tell you that, and I'm not going to continue to look for them. Last thing here, because I think this is an interesting convo, and maybe we can continue it in the campus corner. But Wolfpack James said on the text line, hey, we still have Duke, North Carolina on the schedule, but it's... you're going to need a miracle to win out, which we all know isn't happening, in order for NC State to get to the tournament. The other point is, he says, I like Keats too. I think he would land on his feet at a respected mid-major like VCU or a Georgetown. Mid-major Georgetown. That's, you know, how times have changed.
Yeah.
I think he's a good coach, but the NC State basketball coach might be the toughest job in all of sports.
Wow.
Because we want to compete with UNC and Duke. But they have like a 30-year head start on us. IDK, if we ever find the coach that can fill in the gap, but you have to keep trying. So just taking the spirit of that comment away, we don't have to really debate if it's the hardest job in sports. But the spirit of it is, it's pretty damn hard. Like, how hard do you think that job is to be the head basketball coach at NC State, where fans want something at a like national respected level, And they just don't get there all that frequently. How hard is that job?
It wasn't hard for Everett Case, Norm Sloan, or Jim Valvano to make it a national program. It is possible.
Well, I mean,
that was way back in the day.
It was. And look, after the Valvano firing, they definitely got left behind because they kept getting their butt kicked and they tried to become a football school, which they're not a football school. So I think if NC State would look and put its resources into being a basketball school, I do think it's possible for them to win and compete with Carolina and Duke more consistently than they have in my lifetime.
The football school comment is interesting.
The thing that's interesting to me about all this is I think once Coach K came and turned Duke into what they were going to become, and we know they had their times where they were a really good program before that, but once Duke took them into the stratosphere, as far as Coach K is concerned, taking Duke into the stratosphere, I think that hurt NC State a lot because now you have to compete with two blue bloods, not just one, but now you got to deal with two. And so it's going to be hard, you know, to go out there and compete with every other program in the country that has a great reputation. But then in your own state, when you're trying to recruit, let's just break it down to the best basketball prospects in North Carolina. It's kind of niche for kids to want to come up and play for NC State. Most kids, you know, they come out from day one, the minute they pick up a basketball, they want to play for Carolina or they want to play for Duke or Wake Forest, you know? All right, I might have been, you know, going a little bit far-fetched with that. But they want to play for North Carolina. They want to play for Duke. So that already
I think their parents want them to play for Wake Forest. I think that's more accurate.
So that already puts you behind the eight ball there. And so that kind of puts a little bit of a limit on the prospect that you can get. I mean, they've had their share of recruiting wins. But I think when it comes to getting those program-building classes where you get – you know, 3-4 guys in the program that are either contributors to stars and then keep building on that and get that quality depth that the Carolinas and the Dukes have, that's when it becomes hard because you're just not going to get the same caliber of player.
Well, and when did they have those recruiting wins?
Well, they had some guys in their time that were big recruits.
No, I'm not even trying to clown that point. What I'm trying to tell you is the last time that they consistently got recruiting wins, it was when Mark Gottfried was coaching.
Yeah.
And what was Mark Gottfried about? Going against the rules.
NIL before NIL, right?
That's right. That's right. Which is so bad for NC State. Poor NC State, too, because you were, what, just 5 years, basically, behind the eight ball on that? Mark Gottfried shows up at the right time, then maybe you're starting to win a little bit more because he knows how to play that game. He played that game before you were allowed to play that game. And that's when they had a 4-year run where they get to the NCAA tournament and they have a couple of Sweet 16 appearances.
Yeah.
And it's been twice since Gottfried left. In fact, the last 2 years that he was there, that's what gets him fired. And then also all the off-court stuff in the first place. So that's how they won here recently. Then you had the Sendak years where you get there 5 straight years in a row. Gottfried comes over. Success there, and then since then, you've had two appearances.
Keats has done a respectable job in the portal getting guys, but again, he just can't put together that complete cast that will really take them where they want to go. The last time they did was the Jarkel Joyner crew with them, but you know,
They get studs sometimes in the backcourt.
Oh, the portal, man. Yeah. DJ Horn, to me, is the most underrated player in the league. He is nasty with a capital N.
Yeah, you might be right. And then they've had, you know, Terquavion Smith, and Jarkel Joyner was kind of that underrated guy because Smith got all of the love. And then, man, I'm trying to think of...
But they had
Trevor
good role players around him, but it's like right now, this season, you look at his team, it's DJ Horn and then Marcel. He's okay. But then you got DJ Burns, that's supposed to be the second star, but good Lord, man, he's 6'9", 350, 360, can't get a rebound to save his life.
I saw an offensive possession where in the first half, where he caught it on the elbow, immediately back to the basket because, you know, the face-up game, he might get his cookies taken. So back to the basket, one dribble, two dribble, hook shot from like 10 feet out, trying to bank it in on the left side. It's just, man, there's just nothing happening there. You got to be, and he's skilled.
4.2 rebounds per game. He averages 4 for his career, and he's averaging 4 this season. That is completely unacceptable. Like, you just got to call it what it is. It's soft for a man of his size.
Well, I don't think it's soft. I think it's tired.
No, I think it's soft. 4 rebounds.
It's
rebounds
me walking up the stairs.
Yeah, rebounds is about effort and want to and grit, man. And for you to be that kind of size, you should want to dominate the rebounds, putting your body on guys and really being physical down there. And he doesn't do that.
But no, I don't think he mind. I don't even know if he feels people bouncing off of him. Like I don't think he's soft in the way that, ooh, you know, get away from me, I don't want the contact. I think he's more so, that's too far from me. I'm not going after that rebound. And the stats have backed that up. All right, let's go to Brian Burns. That's the tease. We need to please it here with Brian Burns, where we stand today.
Yeah, he's
with
not soft.
The Burns situation. I don't think so.
No.
Some people on the text.
Some people off the comment.
You know, yeah. I understand the segue attempt. I think people would refute that on the text line once we tease Brian Burns.
Yeah.
We got people calling him Pampers on the text line.
Mm.
Like Charmin soft, maybe, if you're Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
I don't think that. I think people were frustrated with Brian Burns admitting that, hey, in the back of my mind, injuries were there, and perhaps that dictated the way I played a little bit. And so that's why people don't want to bring him back long term, especially with him putting up as low of a sack total as he did. It's the lowest he's put up since his rookie year. And this is a guy that only has 1 year of a double digit sack total. Brian Burns is a really interesting combo. Here's where we are today. The Panthers have until March 5th to place the franchise tag on Brian Burns after the window opened up yesterday. The Panthers haven't used it since 2021. That's when they put it on Taylor Moton, and they were eventually able to work out a deal. It was a big right tackle deal, but they were eventually able to work one out to where no drama afterwards. We already have drama with Brian Burns after the Panthers reportedly got up to as much as $27 million per year, according to Joe Person, according to sources with knowledge of contract negotiations. Panthers got up to $27 million per year. Brian Burns was staying steady at 30. So they couldn't meet in the middle. Maybe the Panthers even feel like they did meet in the middle. Brian Burns wasn't budging. You go into this season after this weird two-day hold-in, not even missing any games, telling you he wasn't going to miss any games after he plays the season opener against Atlanta. But then, Wes, yeah, some not his fault, because it's hard to accumulate sacks when you're down all the time. And the opposing offense just wants to run and run and run and run. Like, you don't even have any opportunities to get sacks. So that was going against Brian Burns. And I think that's some context that needs to be applied. But still not one of his best years that we've seen here in Carolina. Even if the advanced metrics would tell you, he's still one of the best pass rushers. Where do we stand with Brian Burns on if you think he's going to come back or not, based on where we are right now? Like, does this, basically, I'll ask you this. Does it get messy again, Wes? Or do you think it's smoother sailing with the new front office compared to what we had last year?
It's got a chance to. I mean, you look at the pass rush win rate for him. He was 11th in all of the NFL. The double team percentage was low. But I think when you look at the Panthers now, he basically gave them all the ammunition that they needed to not give him that contract that's going to put him in that $30 million club. I mean, you come out, first of all, they're going to look at the numbers. And then also, they probably will bring up that comment saying that, hey, you know, we don't like, because everything I've heard about negotiations with contracts is the teams are going to try to bring up every little thing they can to discredit you to get the number where they want it. And so I think that they're going to look at that, say, hey, man, you know, you're out there worrying about getting hurt. We're not sure about your effort at all times. We don't know if we can trust that. This, that, they're going to use all that against him. That's why I don't know why he even comes out and says something like that. They're going to use that against him in these negotiations. They're going to use his numbers. They're going to say, hey, you digressed this year. But at the end of the day, I think he ends up back. I think he's going to have to concede a little bit off what he wanted. And then I think the Panthers, you know, may have to come up, because now they can be like, hey, we were going to offer you 27, but that was off of what you did before. Now we want to throw you 24, 23, something like that.
That's when it gets real messy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But then he's going to have to figure out, all right, do I really want to sit this thing out? But then he's going to be like, I did have a down year. I did say those things in the media, this, that, and the third. So what do I want to do? But I think still, if he hits the open market, if they don't tag him, which I think they're going to tag him anyway.
They're going to tag him.
But if he did hit the open market, I think he could get close to it. But he just messed up. He did what a lot of these guys do. They talk a good game, and they don't follow it up. He should have set out until he got the contract that he wanted. And then this wouldn't be a thing.
But the problem is players don't win those battles. They don't.
I mean, it depends. If they really dig in, I think they can.
And I'm not even trying to say, oh, it's never happened. But mm-hmm. I am trying to look for that last case where it did. Because I don't know the example of, oh, this player sat out and they won because of it.
Emmitt Smith?
Oh, man, we're going back to the 90s.
I mean, no, but that's the first player that comes to mind. So, Ennis Smith.
That's fine. That was 30 years ago.
Recently that held out.
So Le'Veon Bell is the infamous one.
Okay.
And Le'Veon got, like, more guaranteed money, but it was basically the same contract. Like, he would argue that he got to sit a year, but then got more guaranteed money. The problem is that the contract was very similar when he decided to sit out the entire year. We know how the Chargers operated. Like, go ahead and sit out all you want to. I guess with Nick Bosa, like, he sat out a game.
He did.
I mean, they were always going to pay him a lot, right? Like, how much did you really... I'm talking about real refutes where you had one party digging their heels in the concrete, same thing with the other, and they weren't going to budge, and then eventually the player ends up winning out. So, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with Brian Burns. I do wonder if it gets...
Oh, Revis. We can go to Revis. Revis definitely was digging those heels in for his money.
Yeah, I don't remember the money on that. As far as what he got, but maybe Darrell Revis. Well, I don't know, depending on, like, because some of these guys are going to get big money anyway.
Yeah.
And so I just don't know how much of a difference it made, but maybe it did. So that would be a good one if that's the case. I wonder how ugly this is going to get, or if the Panthers just decide, all right, we're going to do the franchise tag thing, and then we'll work it out so it doesn't get crazy. This is what I also want to bring up, because it does make me worried a little bit as a Panthers fan anytime I see that Rams offer. When the Rams wanted Brian Burns and the news came out that they offered two first-round picks and a second-round pick, that is an amazing haul. It's not good. It's not great. It's, oh, my God, bananas, what are you doing type of haul. And that's for Brian Burns. And, like, even me at the time, I got it. I got why the Panthers turned it down. It was 50-50 for me. Like, Fitty, I know, is one that was saying, hey, they should take that deal. I think you and I were both about 50-50. That's a lot to turn down. And maybe I got scared. Maybe I got scared just like Scott Fitterer did, saying, nope, we think that we can keep Brian Burns. The contract situation is going to be fine. He's going to agree to what our high water mark is, and so it'll be all good. But then he didn't, and then it got messy from there. But also, once that news came out, Wes, once Brian Burns and his party realized that the Panthers turned down two firsts and a second, they thought, oh, they value me. They know that I'm a guy that they want for the future. And so now I'm going to ask for the moon and the stars and everything you got. And then once Suleiman, the capologist, who I assume is the one that was negotiating a lot of what was going on here, once they said, no, we can't do 30, that's when it started to get a little hairy. And now it's like, okay, maybe it does get even more messy leading up to this regular season.
Yeah, man, it could. But I think that they're going to solve this one. I think this will not get too wild. I feel like both sides are going to have an understanding coming into this. It could get a little contentious, but I think that he'll get the job done. I think the Panthers will have him back, and I don't think this will get as ugly as we think.
You can hear Wes and Walker live and local every weekday afternoon from noon to 3. Sit tight and stay locked, because Instant Replay continues next, only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.
McDonald's is not new to chicken. So maybe stop questioning their chicken cred and get your hands on the McCrispy. Juicy fried chicken, buttery bun, unmatched pickle to chicken ratio. Yeah, they know what they're doing. In fact, we can honestly say they're not new to chicken. They're true to chicken. The McCrispy. Only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
You're listening to Instant Replay on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ, because great radio the second time around is always twice as nice. Earlier this afternoon on the Kyle Bailey Show.
We got college basketball tonight. Duke and Miami. College basketball last night. NC State falling in an important game. Wake Forest bludgeoning the Pitt Panthers. Let's get to it all with Stephen Wiseman, who covers Duke and the ACC for the News and Observer. He's back with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. Steve, how you been, man?
Hey, Kyle. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Let's start with tonight's game, as a matter of fact. Duke and Miami.
Miami's reeling. They've lost four straight. Obviously, Jim Larrañaga does not have the team or the season that they'd hoped and anticipated to have down there. This feels like a game that, I mean, nothing's automatic in college basketball anymore, but, I mean, it's disaster tomorrow if Duke loses this game, right?
Yeah, especially, nothing's automatic, especially on the road in conference play, right? We've seen a lot of upsets happen. But, with Miami, the weather playing, Nigel Pack is not going to play tonight. Jim Larrañaga said yesterday, so that's one of their top guards. And this is a game. The way Duke's playing right now, 15 wins in the last 17 games, they need to take care of this because they got a tough one coming up on Saturday against Wake Forest.
All right. I like that. This is a game that you have to get through. You got to get this dub to get to Wake Forest. Seed line, Duke, as we're getting closer to the tournament, where do you think, are they a 4 seed, a 5 seed? Where does Duke end up here?
So the committee had them at 3 with their release on Saturday, but they were the last 3. They were number 12 overall. So any slippage, and they're going to be back on the 4 line. And they've had to work some to get back up to the 3 line because I think after they lost to Carolina, a lot of the projections had them down maybe on the 4 or 5 line. So they have played well since then, but there's still some big wins to be had, including, again, Saturday against Wake. Then they have Virginia coming up at home and then Carolina at home before we even get to the ACC tournament. So there are opportunities for Duke to move up. If other people lose too, they get back up to the 2 line. But they're kind of tenuous right now on the 3 line.
Had they been about what you thought they'd be so far this year? Because I've heard some really interesting analysis on Duke lately. For instance, our buddy Paul Biancardi, he said before the season he thought they were a top 20 team, probably not much better than that. And that's kind of what they look like right now.
Yeah, and they were preseason. You know, some people had number one in the country, right? So,
right.
So if you go from that angle, this is disappointing, right? But I think a 20-5 record is pretty good. I think people would take that if you said at the start of the year. They got a couple of good non-conference wins, Baylor and Michigan State. And heck, Charlotte turned out to be a pretty good win, didn't it? So that's a good win for them. But there is some work to be done here. There's some things that are a little bit concerning. They don't always bring it defensively like I think John Shire would like. They're a really consistent offensive team. Kyle Filipowski has not been, you know, the ACC player of the year that he was projected to be in the preseason. So they need him. I mean, John Shire told me this in October. We need Kyle Filipowski every night to be there every night, and that's not been the case. So if they're going to exceed what they've done so far, they have to get him going to get him, you know, 15, 18 points a night instead of, you know, every once in a while coming out and scoring 8 or 9 points.
That, or I guess you can just ask for 35 from Jared McCain, right? He's apparently capable of giving him that now.
If he's going to do that every night, I'll take Duke's chances. He's really come on, hasn't he? He's playing like the best freshman in the ACC and, you know, one of the better ones of the country. So, it's hard. I sat there Saturday and I couldn't believe what I was seeing, the way, you know, every shot went in the first half there. It was really amazing. And he hasn't had games like that before to that degree, but he's been consistently scoring and you know, hitting perimeter shots. And that's something that, you know, last year Duke didn't really have, was a perimeter game. And so that's a big thing. And when you get into March, it's all about shot making and protecting the ball. And Duke seems to do both of those pretty well.
Steve Wiseman with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline, talking Duke and the ACC here. As far as the overall broad perception of the league goes, you know where I'm going with this. Wake Forest, you know, blows out Pitt last night. This morning, they're 26 in the net ratings and they're 21st in KenPom. Yet ESPN's Joe Lenardi still has them in the first 4 out. Talk to me. I mean, sometimes I get accused of being an AC, actually all the time. I get accused of being an ACC homer, but I am not afraid to call this out for what it is. You know, it's just infuriating to watch what amounts to these, you know, furrowed brows of these bracketologists like, oh, this ACC's trend is concerning, when the real trend over the past couple of years, Steven, appears to be that when the ACC does get to the tournament, they perform pretty well. I mean, what do you think of this perceived anti-ACC bias?
Yeah, they do well, and, you know, it all goes to what happens in the non-conference play, right? So you come in, last year teams had bad losses. This year we don't really have, the ACC does not really have one of their top teams that stubbed their toe in a horrible manner in the preseason, losing a quad 3 game to a non-conference team. Those didn't happen this year. So I don't know where that's coming from, to be honest with you. Like, you know, anybody in the committee that would look at Wake Forest now, with those metrics that you just rattled off, that's a team that's definitely in the field. They're not going to even question that, because that's what it's all about, is the metrics and everything. So, yeah, that's kind of disappointing. But, you know, I still think, all that said, you're probably looking at five teams tops, which the last 2 years was a disappointment. Now it's kind of getting to be the norm, right? So the problem is that you got teams down lower that aren't doing enough to get to make themselves warrant conversation, like NC State, you know, which last night came off a great win over Clemson last Saturday, and then, you know, just kind of laid an egg in the first half and couldn't eventually overcome it with Syracuse. That knocked them back off of any conversation.
Stephen Wiseman with us on the Body Works Plus guest hotline. State loses a really tough one last night to Syracuse. And, you know, both teams are vying for a tournament spot. Both teams are right there. I think now State is, 8-7 in the ACC. Syracuse improved to 8-8 last night. So, you know, they're jostling for position. They're all fighting for bids here. But specific to NC State, give me your view on, you know, where they are right now at this point in the season. And what do you think it looks like next year?
You know, they're just so inconsistent, and I like the fight they show to come back. Again, the Clemson game, they were down double digits on the road in the second half to a Clemson team that's going to the tournament this year, and they came back and beat them, and DJ Horn carried into that win. But then they come out at home, and they're down 15 at halftime to Syracuse, and which just lost to Georgia Tech after beating Carolina the week before. So, again, we're talking about inconsistency of these teams that are down in the middle to lower part of the conference. That's what's hurting it. But specifically the State, you know, they're going to have a decision to make here in the offseason if they're happy with the direction the program's going with Kevin Keats. He made the tournament last year. It doesn't appear he's going to make it this year. They're going to have to do a lot of winning from now through the middle of March to get back in. You know, Boo Corrigan, the AD, just got a new contract. So he's set and he's comfortable. And we'll see if he decides he wants to make a change or if he wants to ride it out one more year with Kevin Keats, who has shown to be pretty good at like recycling a team, and you know they're competitive. They're not a team that's like at the end of the Gottfried era when they were, you know, losing at the bottom of the conference. That's not happening at least.
Stephen, Carolina's going to JPJ, to John Paul Jones Arena in Charlottesville on Saturday. They'll have had a week off since beating Virginia Tech last weekend. Just had Coach Matt Daugherty in studio about an hour ago, and he said that really, really concerns him. You factor in that Virginia just got bludgeoned on the road at Virginia Tech by 34 points on Monday. Any concern about Carolina going to Charlottesville on Saturday?
I mean, I think the break is good for them because they haven't had this. Every other team in the league has had this. Well, they didn't have a midweek game, and they got some time to work on themselves. And usually teams come out of that and play pretty well. So I have a feeling that they're going to be okay. It's just a matter of what kind of Virginia team they face, because the Virginia team that played the last two games has been just awful on offense, and Carolina's been a good defensive team, and so I would think they'd be able to shut them down. But again, Tony Bennett's going to have them ready on Saturday, and Charlottesville's been a tough place for Carolina to play as of late. So I do like Carolina in that game, but I don't feel really great about it.
I hear you. I know you're busy covering the ACC, but you pay attention to college basketball. You know, here in Charlotte, the 49ers are having a heck of a year under Aaron Ferg as the first-time head coach. But you go further west up the mountain, and App State, my goodness. I mean, they've won three straight. They've got old ODU tomorrow night. They're atop the Sun Belt Conference right now. They already have a win over Auburn under their belts. I mean, App State seems like a team that could be mighty dangerous come tournament time. What do you think of those guys?
Yeah, and that win over Auburn will help them at seeding time if they win the conference. And they'll be, you know, instead of maybe being a 15 or a 14, maybe it'll be a 13 or a 12. And that makes a big difference in who you're playing. We see a lot of 12-5 upsets, right? We see a lot of 13-4 upsets even. And that's possible. And so that's just a great story that's happened up there with App State basketball, because they were completely off the map as far as the college basketball world for a long, long time. And it's nice to see them getting back up there, and after going to the tournament the first time in a long time a couple of years ago, kind of getting it going again.
No doubt, man. And that's the thing. I mean, Dustin Kearns has done a great job, but to come back closer to home, like I mentioned a second ago, how about the job that Aaron Fearn has done there? I mean, an Aussie, a guy from Australia, who took over when Ron Sanchez left at a very awkward time in the offseason. Nobody expected anything. And they're packing Halton Arena out for home games for the first time since Bobby Lutz was there.
That's fantastic. I'm glad to see that. You know, they did come up and play Duke in December.
Yep.
And, you know, Duke won it pretty handily. But I remember thinking, you know, they had a decent record that time coming into that game. And I saw some things that I liked about them. And, And here they are, you know, competing with Florida Atlantic, who was in the Final Four last year for the conference championship. So good for them, especially that story that the coach coming in, you know, after Sanchez left in the offseason, an awkward time. You can't really, it's hard to build a roster at that point, right? It's, you're kind of just doing what you can do and hand to mouth kind of deal. But he got it done, and good for him. Good story.
No doubt. And it's impossible to root against a team with a guy named Igor, not only on the roster, but in the rotation. So, Stephen Wiseman, News and Observer, covers Duke in the ACC. And look, college basketball at large, he does a great job. And we love catching up, brother. Thank you for the time.
Okay, Kyle. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Tuned into Instant Replay. When the audio was so good, it has to be heard again. Only on Sports Radio 92.7 WFNZ.
The exclusive home of the Charlotte sports fan.